Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashberry. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1365 features a Life Rattle classic story set in Barbados from longtime contributor Denny Hunt. Denny Hunt came to Canada from Barbados with his brother and three sisters in 1967 when he was 12 and a half. Hunt was born and spent his youth in Ellerton, a village of 3,000 to 4,000 people in a landlocked parish on the island where tonight's story is set. The Hunt family settled in Toronto. Denny attended Ryerson and York Universities and has worked for Toronto Social Services since 1981. Hunt has been a frequent contributor to Life Rattle and has been a generous supporter and volunteer for various Life Rattle projects over the years. Tonight, Hunt brings us a riveting memoir, a reflection in detail about his leaving Barbados for Canada when he was only 12 years old. We are made aware of his regrets, fears, and excitement during the emigration experience, something that almost half our country has experienced and the other half should know about. You can listen to Hunt's account of his parents' departure a year and a half prior to him and his siblings on Life Rattle's podcast number 1136 from 2011. Let's listen now as Denny Hunt reads his story, My Departure for Canada, on Life Rattle. You're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario. And remember that Life Rattle stories often contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive, so listener discretion is advised.
My Departure for Canada by Denny Hunt. April 1967. My father's mother, Mrs. Mumsy Seal, took my brother, sisters, and me to the city of Bridgetown, where we had medicals required to travel to Canada. Denny, you hold Cheryl's and Jackie's hand. Steve, you hold Jennifer's hand. I don't want to write and tell your mother that one of you got lost in Bridgetown. And I am too old to make children at my age, my grandmother said. I pouted. I dislike holding hands with anyone, especially my sisters. My grandmother stared at me. I grabbed my sister's, Cheryl's, and Jackie's hand. I dislike holding hands because I resented being treated like a child. I dislike being jostled by adults who push their way between myself and my sisters and force me to release my grip on their hands. I dislike being caught in the middle of the main street when the traffic light changed to amber or red, and the impatient drivers honk their horns as we slowly cross to the opposite corner of the street. We got home at 1:45. My grandmother opened the mail that arrived from my mother while we were in Bridgetown. Denny, my grandmother said, your mother asks whether you prefer to stay an extra year in Barbados and come to Canada with your cousin Colin, and let Steve and my sisters get all the good Canadian things? No way. I want to go to Canada with the others. My Uncle Barry had told me great stories about Canada's 14-lane 401 highway, about the cheap cost of clothes and toys not even available in Barbados, about the excitement of playing in the snow and wearing gloves and winter boots, about the fun of learning to skate and playing ice hockey, about the nice Canadian schools and the superior education Canada offered. I could not wait the extra year to go where every Barbadian dreamt of going. Uncle Barry says English apples grew wild on the streets of Canada, I loved English apples. That night in July 1967, I dreamt I ate a whole English apple. I did not share it with my brother and sisters because they each had their own. Early September, the postman delivered a beige envelope to my grandmother. The envelope contained 5 blue books. "Whose are those?" I asked. My grandmother smiled. She slowly checked the pages of each book, then looked at me. Her eyes turned red, and she wiped her face with the apron tied around her waist. "These are your passports," she said. My grandmother said my brother Steve, 14, myself, 12, my sisters Cheryl, Jackie, and Jennifer, 9, 7, and 5, would leave Barbados for Canada with my mother's second eldest sister, Aunt Ina. Aunt Ina lived in Toronto, but would be on holiday in Barbados and had agreed to come with us on the flight to Canada on November the 20th. I smiled. I was excited about moving to Canada. 1 hour later, I got goosebumps all over my body. I did not want to leave my family and friends, I thought. Canada is a big place, and I'll never find my way around like I do in Barbados. And I'll never be able to make new friends. Maybe I shall stay the extra year with my cousin Colin. I walked out of the house and sat underneath the ackee tree next to the kitchen window. I wanted to take my friends Henderson, Tony, and DeCourcy to Canada with me. I was afraid I wouldn't make new friends in Canada. I wondered whether the Canadian kids would like me. I wondered whether they would make fun of my Barbadian accent. I wondered whether they would understand me when I spoke. I knew I would miss playing cricket because they didn't play cricket in Canada. I hoped the Canadian kids would not laugh at me when I tried skating for the first time. I wondered whether I would be as smart in school as Canadian kids my age. I wondered whether I would like living in Canada. I picked up a handful of pebbles, reared back, and threw them at the black-headed ant nest in the trunk of the ackee tree. I looked to my right at the bird in the mango tree. I knew I would miss the mangoes, the ackees, the pears, and golden apples from my grandmother's fruit trees. The sweet taste of one of my grandmother's mangoes came to my lips. The night before my departure to Canada, I stayed out with my friends until 9 o'clock. I tossed and turned in my bed. I stared at the ceiling and listened as the seconds ticked away. At 6 o'clock a.m., Tony, Henderson, and DeCourcy knocked on the kitchen door and came inside the house. We looked at each other, and for the first time, we were speechless. I felt sad. We stood in the dining room, shifted from side to side, stared at the ceiling and at each other for what seemed like 1 hour. Two minutes later, we shook hands, and they left for school. I promised to write them as soon as I got to Canada, and every month after. Our neighbor, Miss Harris, came to her home and wished us a safe flight. Miss Harris hugged me and slobbered me with kisses. I thought I would suffocate in her big bosom. She released me, and I grasped her ear. Miss Harris smiled. I walked into the bedroom and got dressed. "Denny and Steve, I hope you guys are almost ready, because Johnny is on his way to pick you up," my grandmother yelled from the kitchen. At 7 a.m., my father's friend Johnny Bess drove myself, my Aunt Ina, my cousin, and my brother to the airport in his light blue Vauxhall. My grandmother, Aunt Joan, and my sisters drove behind in Aunt Joan's car. The car pulled away from my home. I looked over my shoulder and through the back window. Mrs. Harris waved as Johnny sped up the road. Would I see my neighbors and friends again? My eyes felt heavy. I would have cried, but I took a deep breath and closed my eyes. My eyelids absorbed the tears. Johnny drove towards the rum shop at the Elton corner where my father had hung out with his friends. I held my head down in the car and stared at the floor. My father's friend, Grampus, ran up to the car window, pushed his hands in the car, grabbed my right hand and shook it. Give your mom my best and tell that worthless father of yours to send the boys a piece of change to buy a bottle of rum, Grampus said. Johnny pulled from the intersection and turned down the old work hill. Everybody ready for the airport? Johnny said. My breathing and my heartbeat quickened. I grabbed the back of the driver's seat. I stared at the plastic mats on the car floor for most of the half-hour drive to the airport. I was leaving my friends, my neighbors, my family, my familiar surroundings, my familiar cricket grounds, my island, and my home. I thought, Johnny, let me out of this car. I do not want to leave Barbados. I'll stay the extra year with my cousin Colin. But I said nothing. Johnny pulled into the departure lane at Sir Grantley Adams Airport at 7:35. I jumped out of the car, tugged at my underwear, which had rolled up my inner thighs, and looked around the airport. Johnny waved away the baggage porter, opened the car trunk, dropped four bags of luggage on the sidewalk, and closed the trunk. He lifted two bags and walked towards the check-in counter. Steve and I grabbed one bag each. I walked backwards and pulled the bag to the check-in counter. My first cousins, second cousins, Aunt Sita, and other relatives who resided close to the airport showed up 5 minutes after we had checked in our luggage. At 9 a.m., the PA announced the plane was ready for boarding. I must have hugged and kissed the whole of Barbados before I walked into the boarding area. I promised everybody I would write them as soon as I landed in Canada. I kissed my Aunt Joan, my grandmother, my other aunts, my first cousins, my second cousins, other extended family members, and walked over to Johnny. Johnny stood close to the airport bar in almost the same spot where he had shaken my father's hands 18 months earlier when Dad left for Canada. Johnny wore a straw hat and held a half-empty Banks beer bottle in his left hand. I extended my hand and we shook. Johnny smiled, pulled a pint and a half bottle of Montgomery rum from inside his jacket pocket, handed it to me, leaned over and whispered in my ear, Denny, give this to the old man. Tell him it is from the boys. I unzipped my already packed carry-on bag, pushed the bottle of rum to the bottom, zipped up the bag, and rushed through the immigration gate. I sat in my seat for the 6-hour trip. This was my first plane ride. I did not eat or sleep. I did not go to the washroom. I kneeled in my seat and looked around the plane at the other passengers and the stewardesses. I looked out the window at the clouds. I thought about the dream my father said he had the night before he left for Canada. My father said he dreamt the plane had crashed a half hour after takeoff. I checked that my seatbelt was pulled tight against my waist and watched the stewardesses walk casually up and down the aisle. My ears got plugged when the plane circled the Toronto International Airport. I felt pain in my ears and upper cheekbone. I raised both hands against my ears and chewed rapidly on the gum I got from Aunt Ina. I looked out the window and saw 10 million city lights in the city. Then I leaned forward and held my head against my chest. And Ina touched my shoulder. Her lips moved, but I didn't hear what she said. I thought I had gone deaf. I stared at Aunt Ina. I can't hear anything, and my ears and upper jaws hurt, I said. Aunt Ina smiled, took a candy from her purse, and handed it to me. The body of the plane vibrated. I grabbed my seat, bit the candy in half, and stared at the back of the seat ahead of me. My ears popped, and the pain in my ears stopped. I put my hands on my ears and checked for blood. The plane had landed. The stewardess spoke over the PA. The time at the Toronto International Airport is 3:15 p.m., and the temperature is 4 degrees. We request that families with children remain on the plane until the other passengers have disembarked. The plane doors opened. A cold breeze blew down the aisle of the jet. The other passengers reached for their bags, put on their hats, coats, scarves, and gloves, and used the front and rear exits. I shivered. My eyes teared. My lower lip quivered. I felt nervous and tired. I wanted to go back home. I missed my grandmother and my Aunt Joan and my friends. I was nervous about seeing my parents. I had not seen or spoken to them in almost 2 years. I wondered whether Mom had changed since she left Barbados. I wondered whether she would recognize us. I was afraid I wouldn't recognize her. I followed Aunt Ina and my sisters towards the front exit of the plane. The cold wind blew through my brown cotton pants, my matching brown jacket, my white and brown zip tarline shirt onto my exposed chest and neck. I staggered back into the plane and dropped my carry-on bag. I cradled the frozen fingers of my right hand around the leather handle of my carry-on bag with my left hand and lifted. I prayed the bottle of rum for my father hadn't broken. I stepped on Canadian soil and saw little piles of white stuff laying on the ground. No one told me that it was snow, but I knew. My aunt and us kids walked along 5 long corridors, down 3 sets of stairs. Men and women dressed in dark blue uniforms stood in groups of 2s and 3s at the end of each corridor. They stared at us or pointed us to the appropriate stairways. I wondered whether they spoke English. Then my aunt and us kids walked through a white coal tunnel. 3 minutes later, we arrived at customs. A man in a blue blazer directed Aunt Ina to the new immigrants only immigration customs line. I walked closely behind Aunt Ina. Aunt Ina stood behind the red line. I stood behind Aunt Ina. The immigration officer looked up from his desk, smiled, and motioned with his hand for us to approach his desk. I took short breaths. My heart beat against my chest, and my knees shook. I was afraid the customs officer would send us back to Barbados on the next plane. Yet, I wanted to go back to my grandmother and my Aunt Joan. I waited in the crowd of passengers at the baggage ramp close to the glass wall. Many people pressed against the wall on the other side of our baggage room. They waved, smiled, and pointed their fingers. More eyes peeped from behind the heads and necks of those at the front. A short, slim black man, wearing a thick brown coat and a gray felt hat, pressed his hands on the shoulders of a taller man in front of him and jumped three times in quick succession. At the top of each jump, he waved a white handkerchief and held onto his hat to keep it from falling off. I looked for my mum, but I did not recognize her from the mob on the other side of the glass.
That was My Departure for Canada, written and read by Denny Hunt. That concludes Life Rattle number 1365. Arnie Ackman recorded Denny Hunt reading his story. My name is Virginia Ashbery. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.